Cole, so far, what has been your impressions of the SEC football media days for 2019?
A little bit slow. Not much drama.
Why is that?
Not much trouble. I think people are beginning to learn how to avoid having things pop up that they're going to have to answer, and they try to knock those out in Destin before they have to come here and meet with all the members of the media. So I think people are just sort of figuring this thing out a little bit more. They're more intelligent with who they bring and how they coach those guys up before they get here. So you're just not getting a lot of the drama. And I think, too, that's – let's be honest. We kind of feel like we know about what a lot of these teams are going to be. We think it's going to be Georgia and Alabama again. We think there's two, three teams, whether it's Florida, LSU, Missouri, that could potentially go on a run and challenge one of these teams. But we kind of know where everybody is. There's only like – there's only two real quarterback competitions in the league.
Absolutely.
Auburn and Mississippi State. So
absolutely.
That usually adds a lot of drama and intrigue. So I think we have probably a pretty good feel of the league right now. No coaching turnover. That takes away from it a little bit.
I can't remember the last time you could say what you just said.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think that'll be the case next year.
Probably not. No, probably not. Especially if this year ends the way it did last year, or this year ends the way last year did as well. That'll probably add to some speculation of how much longer somebody's going to be around.
I tell you what really learned this week, and it's just really nice when you sit down, for example, and see the pure emotions from some of these players. Like, for example, redshirt freshman Matt Corral with Ole Miss. One of my final questions to him, I asked him, what is it going to be like for you to take the field as a starting quarterback for Ole Miss? Because before that, I was talking about Archie Manning and Eli Manning and Chad Kelly and Bo Wallace and all those guys. And he literally paused for about 4 seconds. And I thought, maybe he didn't hear my question. And then you could just see his eyes start glistening up, and he just couldn't put it in words. And I think it hit him all of a sudden that he's the man now.
Yeah.
And he's a redshirt freshman. Can't imagine what that experience is going to be like for him and what he is having to take in as far as that pure emotions of that.
Well, and I think that's part of why he's here. That's part of why Matt Luke wanted him here, because he knows he's going to be the guy. Put him in some situations where he has to answer questions and he has to act as the leader of the football team. I think that's one reason that Barry Odom brought Kelly Bryant here. I mean, Barry Odom wants Kelly Bryant to be in those positions, be in those situations. Barry Odom told me, he said, listen, I take that position serious. I take the leadership part of that position serious. So I want that guy to be in a lot of different situations of leadership and directing the team and being the guy of the team. So if you have chances like this to put them in those situations, I think it's good to be able to do it, to be able to show everybody this is going to be our quarterback. This is going to be the guy that leads our team.
I go back when, I guess it was before the 2013 season, Nick Marshall was supposed to represent Auburn.
Yeah.
And the weekend before, he got into trouble with a marijuana bust. And so they did not allow him to be one of the three guys. And I'm thinking, if you want to punish him, put him through
this ringer. No, it would have been the ultimate punishment for them. But Gus Malzahn made the right move that year for multiple reasons.
As far as it starts with Alabama, Georgia, you bring up Kelly Bryant, and I don't know what's going to play out as far as the appeal, whether or not Missouri is going to be bowl eligible or not. I think if they are bowl eligible, watch out. But if we're talking about Missouri without a Kelly Bryant, for example, would we be even thinking about Missouri possibly being a dark horse in the East?
I think it depends on who's the quarterback. I think if Sean Robinson got eligible this year somehow, maybe we're talking about them as being able to go on that run. They have three of my top five offensive linemen by position.
And we know that's important to you.
It is. They've got a top five tackle in Yashir Durant. They got a top five guard in Trevor Wallace Sims. They got a top five center in Tristan Colon Castillo. They have a top three tight end in college football in Albert O. Larry Roundtree went for 1,000 yards a season ago. Jalen Knox had a good year at receiver, and he's still kind of learning that position. They had to move him over there last year. So I think you look at what Derek Dooley did last year with Drew Locke, and I talked to Drew about just sort of the conceptual football and how he learned more about the game, about the offense, about his team, how to handle situations, field placement, not just down and distance, but where you were on the field, where you were in the game, why to make certain throws at that point in the game instead of just boom, boom, one read, two read, go. You know, this guy's open, throw it here. I mean, he was going single receiver reads in the offense that he had before because they were going so fast. If Derek Dooley can help Kelly Bryant take that little bit of a step, then all of a sudden, I think he might be a really good college quarterback. We go back and think that he was some sort of failure at Clemson. I mean, the guy started a college football semifinal playoff game.
Absolutely.
I mean, he won an ACC championship. So I think the guy's played some big-time football. He understands probably why he's in the situation that he is. And it's not just that Trevor Lawrence is that good. It's that he made some mistakes, and there's some things he needs to improve. But I think he knows he's got a good situation around him. And keep in mind, too, the culture that's being built there. Barry Odom hadn't had a single guy go in the portal, not one. And obviously, so none have left. So, I mean, it just shows you kind of what he means to the players, what that team means, what they all mean to each other. There's a lot of value in that. And then the schedule really lines up perfectly for them, Johnny. I mean, I think week four, South Carolina at Missouri, that's a little bit tricky, a little bit dangerous. But, I mean, you go back to the fact that you get like a two-month stretch at home, and then you get a week off before you go play at Georgia November the 9th, and then November the 16th, you get Florida at home, and they've owned Florida the last 2 years. They've dominated Florida the last 2 years, and now you get them in a cold weather environment late in the season. That's a good spot for Missouri to get them again. So the schedule, their draw from the West is really nice. So, I mean, with Ole Miss and Arkansas, I mean, they got a chance to put together a heck of a season, and Kelly Bryant doesn't have to go be Superman. He just has to cut down on some mistakes. He's going to help with the quarterback run game. That'll force defenses to defend that. And he needs to up his completion percentage on high percentage throws, easier throws. The intermediate accuracy has to improve. And if it does, they really do have a chance. I mean, I'm not real confident in the defense, but I think the offense can operate in different ways. I think they can play ball control. I think they can be high-powered. And I think they can be multiple, and that's going to be tough for people to deal with.
Well, here's the thing. Your point about the defense, just look at Vanderbilt, for example. If Vanderbilt last year, in games that they scored 28 or more points, just regular season, if you want to add the bowl game, then it's an extra loss. But if you just count the regular season, Vanderbilt was 6-1 last year when they scored 28 or more points. And so you talk about Missouri. Can they put some points on the board with Kelly Bryant? Absolutely. And just looking – and Vanderbilt, we're talking about – when you think about the Commodores, you think about how great their defenses have been. Well, last year they were not, and they were in the double digits as far as rankings, as far as those key categories in the SEC.
That's a defense that I worry about. Right there, Vanderbilt. I love their offense. I love the skill guys they're going to have here today. I think it's the best trio of skill maybe they've ever had, running back, tight end, receiver.
Totally agree.
And I think Riley Neal is going to be fine at quarterback. I liked what I saw from him in the spring. He obviously has experience playing in the MAC, but I worry about that defense a little bit. I love Coach Tarver. I think he's going to be great. He's done a great job already, but just they don't have a lot of bodies that I've seen make plays that give me the confidence that they're going to be able to get a lot of stops this year. So that part, I think every team in the East has a chance to be bowl eligible, but Missouri's defense is probably the biggest question mark as to what would keep that from happening.
I have, and the way it plays out, I got Tennessee, Vanderbilt 7-4 going in that final game, but I totally agree with you about Vanderbilt's defense. The area that certainly needs to be improved, you go back to 2017 where you've got manageable distances as far as that defense getting the opponent off the field, like 3rd and 6 in that average. Last year, it went up over a yard per down, and so they go from being one of the top 25 teams in the country as far as 3rd and distance compared to being at the bottom 25% of the all of college football. That is one area that has to be improved. You can't allow teams to prolong drives.
No, I agree. And they're going to get away a little bit from what they did a season ago. Now, it's a hire from within, so I'm interested to see how different this offense looks. Are they really going to spread things out a little bit? Is it really going to be more spread-based? I know there'll be a little West Coast flavor to it, but how much more high-powered can they be? Because they may have to be that kind of team that you talked about last year. They may have to be a team that scores 28, 32 points a game to actually go find a way to be bowl eligible.
Can they be both, though? You look at the quick strikes that Alabama had, for example, with Tua Tagovailoa. For Vanderbilt, I don't think that quick strikes is the key there because I think that will wear out that defense. You mentioned certainly depth is an issue.
The offensive line's not good enough to be the other kind. So they have to be. They have to be a team that's more high-powered offensively because they're not going to be able to grind people down. I don't think they can be that kind of a football team. So I do think they consistently need to be a team that scores points because the offensive line is not going to be great. And, again, I have my concerns about the defense. So I think Vanderbilt's got to be a team that sort of moves towards being a high-powered offensive football team.
We've talked about this with you, visiting, by the way, with Cole Kubelik, about the fact that the way you approach the game and the way you approach your job, you know, you can certainly have all the capabilities and tools to be a coach. every year, as far as SEC football media days, I try to find a topic that I wanted to explore. And this week it was, at what point did you realize that you could be a good coach, you could teach the art of football? And I got on this topic because visiting with Gene Chizik, you know, anybody who wins a national championship, I understand they had Cam Newton, but that was a team with, what, 20-plus seniors on that team.
And he got one as coordinator, too. So
and exactly.
He was
and,
Texas defensive coordinator when they won a national title.
But what I did not know was the fact that, you know, he was an assistant coach at MTSU in the early 90s. And you assume when somebody has a position like that, they already, you know, they play football, they know how to coach the game up and teach the game. And he was talking, he shared with us, that's where he learned how to actually teach football. And so that was one of my pieces this week, finding out at what point, like I asked the same thing of Nick Saban, at what point did you realize that you could, you know, you're a great recruiter. At what point did you realize that you could teach the art of football? And so I look at it from your perspective. I know you and I personally have, you know, spoken about this. Because in just listening to you and the way you break down games, I mean, I know you have the confidence that if you wanted to do that and explore that, you certainly could pull that off.
No, and it's something I think I would enjoy. I think I would like it. I don't know if I'd like recruiting, to be honest with you. I think and here when I got out of school, I did want to be a coach. And the path to success was so much longer than it is now. I mean, you got guys that are 2-3 years out of playing college football that are making $250,000-$300,000. To go be an assistant wide receiver coach or, you know, director of recruiting or some liaison in the football office. So it's a very different path now than it was when you had to be a GA for 8 or 10 years, essentially not getting paid. You know, then you made 40, 50 grand when you started out and you're moving all around. It's just not the same anymore. There's so many spots on these staffs and so many people are moving around, spots are opening up. So it's much easier now. I think I would still like it. I think I would like to teach the game, help people understand the game, help kids get better, help develop kids not only from football perspective but in a life perspective. I think I have lessons I could teach from there. But, you know, I love what I'm doing now. I tell people I hadn't been to work in 6 years, so that's good. Except for this thing. This thing feels like work. This thing will wear you down.
Jordan Rodgers would probably say the same thing about you. Yeah, Cole Kubelik, I'm pretty sure I haven't seen him work any during the last 6 years.
Coming from him would be funny. But
you know what it reminds me of, by the way, in visit with him and hearing him speak to about you? Reminds me at the end of the Alabama-Notre Dame game at the end of 2012 when Alabama, just a couple of plays away from wrapping up a blowout victory over Notre Dame, and Barrett Jones, the center, gets into it with A.J. Yeah. McCarron. And it kind of reminds me of what you two would be like if you were the center, which you played at Auburn, and you got Jordan Rodgers from Vanderbilt. If you were on the same team, I'm pretty sure at one point or another during the course of a season, you would turn around and pull a Barrett Jones on Jordan Rodgers.
Maybe a little bit. I'll tell you this, though. There's a big misconception about Jordan, and a lot of people think that, you know, he got his job because of what he did before and where he's been on TV and things like that. But Jordan knows football.
Absolutely.
And Jordan studies the game. Jordan is a student of the game. He is a film nerd just like I am. I love talking football with him because he likes to ask me questions about the trenches. I ask him questions about routes and coverages, and we really do a good job bouncing things off of each other. And he's just a fun guy to be around. Our whole crew is fun. Tom and Jordan and I and our entire crew behind the scenes, I'm glad we're back together again. But I talk to a lot of different people in this business, and it's rare that you get to work with people that you really like, that you really like to be around, and that you're really friends with. And that's what we are. I mean, he was at my house 2 nights ago, had dinner, hanging out with my kids and my wife, and we stayed up talking for a while. So, I mean, that's if Tom didn't have a Major League Baseball game the next day, he would have been there too. So, you know, he comes through to do the SEC baseball tournament, and he stops by the house and hangs out for a little while. And when we do the Peach Bowl, Tom has us over to dinner at his house. So, I mean, it's really my second family. It is. You go, you meet up on Thursday nights and leave Sunday mornings for 17 straight weekends. They better be your family.
Otherwise,
you're not going to be a happy person.
Otherwise, you're going to be very miserable.
Exactly.
Hey, before we let you go, remind everybody as far as what they can expect out of you. You're talking about your teammates there with the SEC Network. Let them know again what to expect this fall.
Well, we got the same crew back together. So Jordan Rodgers, Tom Hart, and myself will be on the SEC Network Saturday night crew. It looks like we're going to be in Nashville week one. We haven't necessarily been assigned that game, but obviously that falls in our slot. So we're hoping to get that one. I think Vandy, Georgia at Vandy would be a really good game, especially early in the season with some of those weapons that Vanderbilt has. Maybe A&M on that Thursday night heading into that game. So again, we haven't been assigned those games, but hopefully those will be the ones. And then, obviously, jocksfm.com, Monday through Friday, 10 to 2 p.m.
I don't know if Vanderbilt really appreciates this or not, but I can tell you right now, Georgia is not thinking Alabama. Georgia is thinking Vanderbilt.
Well, they should be. Like I said, that could end up being a dangerous game. It could be a four-quarter game. Now, I think Georgia could probably run the ball 65 times and win that game, but we'll see how many points Vanderbilt can find a way to put up early, because if Georgia struggles getting to the passer the way they did last year in week one, all of a sudden Vanderbilt could be moving the football around a little bit.